Chapter 2. The Itsy Bitsy Fire. We have to walk 4 blocks from the train station to the hotel where the auditions are. I spent the whole 2-hour trip watching the brass trio play the locomotion spell that powered the great metal train. And now I hum their spell as I walk beside Gran. The street is lined with tall brick buildings, the sidewalks flooded with people hurrying in all directions. Cars jam the road, horns blaring, taxi drivers leaning out of their windows to shout. This is only the second time I've been to the city. The first time, I came with Mrs. Parrish and the other music craft students from school to see a movie at the big cinema. That was one of the best nights of my life. They had a maestro who played the film score on the piano while we watched it, and her spells had produced all kinds of effects. Wind, rain, fireworks. So it had felt like we were in the movie. I'd been so starry-eyed afterward, I'd barely noticed anything else after we left the cinema. But now, I look around with my mouth hanging open, eyes as round as cymbals. There is magic everywhere. I've never seen so many types of instruments, or heard so many different spells being played at once. Summoning and hovering spells, illusions and glamours. The air carries the smoky smell of magic, like the scent of a match right after you blow out the flame. Through the open windows of a cafe, I hear a pianist playing a complicated concerto that delivers diners' plates and cups on glittering ribbons of magic. Across the street, on a 5th-floor balcony, a little girl plays Au Clair de la Lune on a plastic recorder, her magic coaxing a small potted lily to unfurl its petals. I recognize that spell. It's a common practice piece for young musicians, and I remember playing it over and over when I first began my training, until I was hearing it in my sleep. But the girl is having trouble focusing, because several balconies over, a man with a jug and a pair of castanets is playing a messy wind spell, perhaps trying to cool down his apartment. I wince at the din he produces. Just because anyone can play a spell doesn't mean they should. I watch them until Gran shouts at me to look where I'm going. I'd nearly tripped over a storm drain. Newsstands bristle with papers, headlines screaming things like, "Tokyo Philharmonic staves off deadly typhoon," and "Nigerian maestro composes new cancer-fighting spell." But is it too good to be true? People on the corners hawk rolled spells in plastic tubes, or hand out flyers advertising spectacular performances by music craft's best illusionists. Witness conjuration of cosmic proportion, one night only. I take every flyer they thrust at me, eyes wide, until Gran scowls and shoves them all into a recycling bin, muttering about charlatans. I bounce impatiently alongside her, while the sounds of the city sweep over us. My ears can't help but pick up the melodies hidden in the noise. Every place has its own music, if you listen hard enough. The woods have a quiet, whispery nocturne, all swishing leaves and wind, one of my favorite sounds. It makes me want to lie down and close my eyes and just breathe. But the city is a symphony, so many sounds all clashing and blending, rising and falling, honking cars, shouting people, and, of course, the street musicians who perform magic for spare change. We pass a man who offers to smooth the wrinkles from Gran's face with a spell from his accordion. "Honestly," huffs Gran, not even giving him a glance. But she looks at me with a scowl. "This is what you want to do with your life, Amelia?" "These people are novices," I point out. "When I've graduated from Mistwick, I'll be a maestro, Gran. Like Mom. You know that." She always pretends she doesn't know anything about music craft, like it's not important to remember the difference between novices and maestros. As if pretending none of it exists could convince me to stop playing. Mrs. Parrish explained it to me years ago. While novices are small-time spell workers, maestros are more powerful, specially trained musicians. In groups called symphonies, they travel the world, calming hurricanes, and bringing rain to droughts, and building bridges. All kinds of wonderful and beautiful things. Novices use their magic in small ways, like healing colds or propelling trolleys down the street. But maestros? Maestros change the world. But to earn that special gold pin, you have to pass a series of very difficult maestric exams, which is almost impossible to do without the training found at the world's top music craft schools like Mistwick. And they only take the best of the best. There are other schools, of course, like the Music Craft Academy in this very city, where Mrs. Parrish went. But not many people go there to become maestros. Instead, they train to be music craft teachers or instrument makers, which are also important jobs. But I've always known that I wanted to be a maestro, like my mom, like the people in the symphonies on the television. A trolley rolls past, wheels sparking with golden magic, thanks to the saxophonist standing at the back, sweat shining on his face as he plays Over the Rainbow. Across the street, I spot a 5-piece brass ensemble in hard hats, aiding a construction crew with a hovering spell that lifts heavy beams and tools. Banners of golden magic unfurl from their instruments and slink through the air like slender dragons. Back in our little town, there's only one professional musician besides our music teacher, Mr. Meadows. He's a guitarist who mostly does small spells in his little shop downtown, curing headaches, finding lost keys and pets, substituting when Mrs. Parrish can't teach our class. As a novice, he can't do high-level magic, but he'll usually show me a few new tricks when I ask. Sometimes, he even pays me a little to help him. Things like growth spells when they reseeded the baseball field, or even once playing an elemental spell to hold off rain on the day of the big town-wide picnic. Gran knows nothing about that, or she'd probably have sold my flute on the spot, thinking I was trying magic too big for me. But there aren't many people back home who could play such spells, and certainly no other kids my age who could pull them off. But here, it seems there's a musician on every corner. I've never seen so much magic at work all at once. The air is thick with it, glittering light and glowing ribbons of every color. I slow in front of a Spellstone store and peer through the window at the racks and racks of sheet music for sale, with spells covering everything from novice healing magic and illusion work to restricted, dangerous spells that can only be bought and played by maestros. I could spend hours in there, just leafing through all those papers. I've always dreamed of going into a Spellstones. They're the most famous chain of music stores in the world. They say you can find any sort of spell on their shelves. Spells to recover lost memories or banish thunderstorms, or slow the melting of the glaciers. But then I see the tall building ahead, and I grab Gran's hand. "There it is," I shout. "The hotel where the auditions are." I recognize it from the search I did on the library computer back when I first submitted my application. I glance at Gran's watch. My audition slot is in just 20 minutes. If we'd made the earlier train, I'd have had time to practice beforehand, but now I'll be glad if I just get a chance to change clothes first. Gran shakes her head. "Go on, then. I'll catch up to you. But Amelia, be careful. Watch out for—" "I'll be fine, Gran." I don't need to be given permission twice. I race ahead, pushing through the crowds on the sidewalk and clutching my flute case to my chest. I skid around the corner and then find myself standing right in front of it. The Hotel Rhapsody. Tall and glass and modern. The building is fancy. Seriously fancy. I almost wait for Gran to catch up, but being even a minute late might cost me everything. So I put one foot in front of the other and walk past the two sparkling fountains to a huge revolving glass door. The lobby echoes with voices and the splashing of an artificial waterfall that tumbles from the third floor. A valet walks and plays a guitar, and from it, yellow streamers of magic unfurl to carry a line of suitcases for a guest. I stare at him for a few minutes, wondering how he can juggle so many pieces at once. The silver music note pinned to his uniform designates him as a novice. But the spell sounds pretty complicated. His finger is a blur as they pick the strings. Off to one side is a table with a little sign on it. Mistwick School of Music Craft Auditions. A woman sits behind it, shuffling through a stack of papers. I hurry over and set my flute on the floor, then cough to get the woman's attention. She looks up, frowning. "Cutting it close, aren't we?" I wince. "Sorry. There was this chicken and it was stuck and then we missed the first train. You know what, never mind." She sets aside her papers. "Name?" "Amelia Jones, 12 years old. My birthday is April 3rd. "Just the name will do, thank you." She hands me a paper with the number 242 on it. And as I give her my audition fee, mostly cash I earned charming chickens and doing odd jobs for neighbors, I think, there are 241 other auditions today? How many spots are there? I ask. She blinks at the stack of mostly $1 bills, then sighs. "There are 100 seats available in the freshman 7th grade class, with 4 openings for flutists." My heart drops. Kids fly to the United States from all over the world just to audition. Who knows how many more are trying out altogether? There are auditions being held all over the country this week, so probably thousands. All of them just as eager as I am to get into Mistwick. "Young lady," the woman at the desk eyes me. "Are you all right? You look pale." Fine, I mumble. "How long till they call me?" She consults a paper, then says, "You have about 10 minutes, I imagine. You're lucky I let you in at all. Punctuality is key in a Mistwick musician." I smile weakly. "Right, sorry." Looking out the front windows, I spy Gran waiting for a light to cross the street. Figuring I'd better use this time to clean up, I hurry past the waterfall and a restaurant where fancy people are eating fancy little meals. Glancing across the lobby, I see Ballroom A, where I'm supposed to wait for my audition to start. Looks like there are a bunch of kids there already, and I can hear them warming up. Discordant notes echo through the lobby. The woodsy drone of cellos beneath plinking piano and aggressive trumpets. In the marble bathroom behind the restaurant, I wonder if the gold faucets are actually gold. I look into the mirror and groan. On a good day, my hair is curly and bouncy, like copper coils. But on a bad day, frizzapalooza. And yep, today is definitely a bad day. Giving up on the hair, I put my bag on the counter and unzip it. And my stomach turns inside out. In my rush, I didn't check the grape juice cap, and now it's poured all over my nice dress. And not just that, it soaked my sheet music too. I lean back with a groan. "Okay," I mutter. I look in the mirror, take a deep breath, and plant 2 fists into the countertop. "No panicking. Pull it together, Amelia Jones. Think." I quickly zip my bag shut, grab my flute case, and run out of the bathroom. There's an exit to the back of the hotel to my left. I bust through the back door and into the parking lot behind the hotel. A dumpster sits to my right, and I duck behind it and spread out the contents of my bag. 1 soaking, grape juice-stained dress, and 3 pages of Handel's Sonata in E minor. With everything laid out in front of me, I unsnap my case and take out my flute, sliding the pieces together until it's nearly the length of my arm. I take a moment to exhale, lick my lips, and try to still myself. Breathe in. Breathe out. Find the tempo. When I'm ready, I begin to play. Not Handel's Sonata, but a simpler tune everyone knows. The Itsy Bitsy Spider. It's an easy drying spell for when you spill water on the floor or your laundry comes out damp. As I play it now, bursts of blue magic float from the flute and settle on the soaked items like butterflies. The air around me starts to heat up a little, which means the spell is working. But in my impatience and nervousness, I play a little too fast, And that, plus the heat of the summer, equals disaster. Because the papers and the dress burst into flames. With a yelp, I stumble backwards, nearly dropping my flute. The blaze leaps up, close to catching the garbage piled in the dumpster. Heat rushes over my skin. I raise my flute, hands shaking, and try to think of a spell to conjure water. Rain, rain, go away? No, that's another drying spell, the opposite of what I need. To reverse any spell, you have to transpose it to a parallel key, major to minor, or vice versa. But that takes a lot of preparation, and I've never reversed this particular spell before. My mind races, but it feels like every thought in my head caught on fire too. All I can do now is watch the flames leap higher and higher, just like the panic in my chest. If I burn down the hotel, will they still let me into Mistwick? Focus, Amelia! Out of nowhere, I hear a swift flourish of violin music. I don't recognize the melody, but it's some sort of tarantella. Fast and reckless, notes popping in the air. I look around in confusion when a deluge of water dumps from the sky and douses the fire. It's like someone upended a bucket from one of the windows above. It splashes over my sneakers, washing a bit of the mud away. In the resulting puddle lie the remains of my dress and papers, mostly ashes now. Gasping, I look up to see a boy standing at the end of the dumpster, a violin tucked under his chin, his fingers flying over the strings, his bow slicing the air. He's wearing a black suit with shiny lapels, and I wonder faintly if he's here for a wedding or something. He looks very formal. He plays for another minute, closing the spell, then lowers the violin. He has brown eyes and dark hair that flops in all different directions, and the biggest ears I've ever seen. "Wow," I say, "you're really good." He grins. "Drying spell gone wrong?" He has an accent, British, I think. I blink, then nod. Itsy Bitsy Spider. He laughs, tucking his instrument into a case lying open at his feet.
"I think your spider's a pyromaniac."
I let out a long sigh. My hands are still shaking a little. Without my sheet music, I'm going to have to play my audition spell from memory. Great. Thanks for that. I could have burned down the hotel.
"I'm sure you'd have handled it," he replies with a shrug. "I just happened to be out here for a quick practice and thought I'd pitch in."
Taking a second look at him, I ask, "You're auditioning?"
"You bet."
He opens his jacket to reveal the number 241 on his chest.
"I'm Jai. Jai Kapoor."
"Amelia Jones." He frowns.
"Amelia Jones? I feel like I know that name. Have you ever played in any of the big concert halls? London, Paris?"
"Yeah, a real famous one called My Treehouse." I laugh, thinking he's joking. Then I realize he might actually be serious.
"Huh," he says. "Must have been someone else I was thinking of. So, Mistwick, huh?"
I kneel to pack my flute away. "Been dreaming of it my whole life. You?" He shrugs.
"Don't really have a choice. My parents went there, and my grandparents. We Kapoors are a tradition at Mistwick, they say."
It's strange talking to someone who's been dreaming of Mistwick, too. Strange in a good way. Like meeting a person who's read all the same books as you. There were other music kids at my school, of course, but none of them cared about Mistwick the way I do.
"You're brave, going in for flute,"
Jai says.
"That's the most competitive category, after piano. You'll have to outshine twice as many musicians."
I smile weakly. Brave. Yeah, that's me. Just, you know, always trying to do things the hard way. I should have guessed flute would be one of the more popular instruments. They say you can tell a lot about a person by the instrument they choose. You can play any spell as long as your instrument is capable of carrying the melody, but certain instruments have their specialties. Brass, like tuba and trumpet, are good at wards and hovering spells, for example. And flutes are particularly good at healing magic.
Percussion is known for energizing spells, which is why you see drummers at sports matches a lot. And if it's elemental magic you need, the best choices are cellos or harps. Mrs. Parrish had told me years ago, when I'd first told her I wanted to go to Mystwick, that choosing a less common instrument, like the euphonium or organ, would make it much easier to get in, with fewer musicians vying for those spots in the Mystwick roster. But for me, choosing flute has always been based on one totally different and non-negotiable reason. It was my mom's instrument. And if that means facing tougher odds, then I'm ready. My insides may be slowly melting into trembling lumps of jelly, but I'm ready. "Violin for you, huh?" I ask. He nods, sighing a little.
"It's not my favorite, but it's my strongest instrument. I wanted to go for guitar or saxophone, but my dad, die!"
shouts a stern voice from the hotel door, and we turn to see a tall, serious-looking man in a suit like Jai's standing there. He has a maestro's gold pin on his lapel, polished to a shine. He has the same big ears as Jai, but a lot less laughter in his eyes.
"You are supposed to be practicing."
"I was, Dad," Jai says. But then
you thought you'd waste time clowning around."
The man shakes his head, his eyes stormy.
"Get inside and take your seat and focus. It's time you got serious, son."
I lower my gaze, but see Jai grit his teeth.
"Right," he says. "Coming."
We walk in together, Jai's dad several steps ahead, his shoulders stiff and his black hair perfectly combed.
"My dad says sax and guitar aren't serious instruments,"
Jai finishes in a whisper. Then he makes a face. In Ballroom A, which leads to a set of double doors labeled Ballroom B, where the auditions must be taking place, a bunch of kids are pacing around as they sing or hum the melodies of the spells they'll be performing for the audition. Singing doesn't produce magic, so it's a safe and quick way to run through a spell. Mrs. Parrish calls it solfège, and sometimes we spend whole class periods just singing spells instead of playing them. The kids look like strange animated dolls, their eyes unfocused and their hands holding up invisible instruments. The sounds of all their voices and different melodies clash and harmonize. I can identify many of the spells they're practicing and realize most of them are way more difficult pieces than my sonata. But that doesn't bother me. It's better to nail a simpler spell than flub a fancy one. Still, I eye a few flutists, trying to judge how good they are, though most of them scooch aside and stop their warm-ups as Mr. Kapoor pushes through.
"Your dad went to Mystwick too?"
I whisper to Jai.
"Yeah. Now he's with the Austrian Philharmonic. My mom was supposed to bring me to the audition, but she got tied up with work back in London."
At my blank expression, he adds,
"She's the Minister of Musical Affairs for the UK, same as my granddad was before her."
Jeez, is there a non-musical person in this kid's entire family?
"Dad had to miss a performance to come here," Jai adds. "Some big illusion show for the King of Denmark, so he's extra cranky."
"Oh," I say casually, as if missing performances for kings is a totally normal problem to have. I can tell Jai is trying not to stare at me, but then he asks tentatively,
"So, do you live on a farm or something?"
I glance down at my work boots, jeans, and t-shirt, with a picture of Johann Sebastian wearing sunglasses, beneath the words, "I'll be Bach," all spattered with mud and chicken poop. At least they seem to have aired out a bit. That, or I've gotten used to the smell. Yes. It seems to be the easiest explanation. Gran is standing outside the ballroom, looking around nervously and fidgeting with her driving gloves.
"Where have you been?" she asks.
She gives Jai a quick, suspicious look. Gran's gotten weird about me talking to boys, like they're all on the verge of dragging me to prom or something, then pulls me aside. Jai heads on in with a grin and a wave, and I see his father's hand clamp hard on his shoulder. there are a bunch more kids waiting in chairs, and they're all dressed like they're going to a funeral, a very fancy funeral. The girls wear black dresses. The boys wear suits like Jai's. Everyone is tuning up, but a sign on the wall reads, "No magic." So it's just scales and random notes and handheld electric tuners, no spells. There are warded practice rooms farther down, where I see sparks of magic beneath the doors.
"You're sure this is what you want?"
Gran asks, her eyes searching my face. "Gran, you know it is."
"Amelia."
Her hand grips my arm so tight, I worry she's about to drag me out of the hotel.
"This won't be like your school, where you can play rings around everyone else."
"What are you saying, Gran?" I frown. "Are you saying I'm not good enough for Mistwick?" Her eyes widen.
"No, no, not that. It's only that you're so young to already have your whole life planned out. Maybe there are other things you'd like to try first. You never know."
"Are you going to tell me I'm not allowed to audition?" I say it louder than I'd intended, and a few people glance at us. My cheeks burn, but I don't look away from Gran. "Are we really going to go over this again? Gran, this is what I want. This is the only thing I've ever wanted."
"It would mean leaving me," she says. "The school's on the other side of the country, you know, way up in the Rocky Mountains."
"Well, maybe it isn't about you, Gran." The words leap off my tongue before I can stop them, sharp as glass. She looks at me a moment, and my stomach clenches. I so do not want to argue with her about this now. Not in front of all those other kids, right before the most important audition of my life. Why can't she just tell me good luck? Or even snap at me to be serious and focus like Jai's dad did to him. At least then I'd know she wants me to do my best today. Then she says,
"No, it's about her. You think I don't know that? I know you keep her picture in your flute case."
"So what? You don't want me to be like my mom?"
"Of course I want you to feel close to her. I'm just scared of you trying so hard to be someone else that you never find out who you are. And music craft, Amelia, it's dangerous."
My chest pinches. "Well, just because you're scared doesn't mean I have to be." She must see the determination in my eyes, because she finally sighs and shakes her head.
"They aren't letting adults into the waiting area, so I'll be over at the restaurant, okay?"
That's it. No hug, no advice. But that's how it's always been with Gran. I stopped expecting encouragement from her years ago. Suddenly, I wish I'd asked Mrs. Parrish to bring me here today, not Gran. Deep down, I guess I thought if I did well here, Gran would finally accept my magic and realize I'm not giving it up, not for anything. I just wish I understood why she hates it so much. Face still red, I walk into the waiting room, where it seems like a million pairs of eyes fix on me. I can't help but think they heard some of the argument, even though Gran and I were mostly whispering. Cheeks burning, I take the seat beside Jai, who's got earbuds in, probably listening to his audition spell. There's a pair of double doors at the end of the room, where the kids go in one by one to audition for the maestros from Mistwick. "So many people," I say, taking out my flute and fitting the sections back together. Jai nods, taking out one of his earbuds.
"But Mistwick only takes the best of the best."
I swallow, hard. As a distraction, I point at his dangling earbud, from which a spell is blasting at top volume so it almost buzzes like a bee against his tuxedo, all drums and wild guitar riffs. "You're playing a rock spell for your audition?" He laughs, but glances nervously at the corridor, where his dad is still lurking.
"No, this just gets me in the zone. Besides, my dad would probably disown me if he ever caught me playing a spell that was so..."
He drops his voice and does an impression of his father.
"Unserious."
"He says rock magic is for losers."
Jai rolls his eyes. At least his dad doesn't hate all music craft like Gran does. I wish I had something to listen to get me in the zone, but I don't think anything short of a hypnotizing jazz spell would work right now. My feet bounce restlessly, like they're ready to take off at a sprint for the doors. As if he can read my thoughts, Jai nudges me and says,
"Don't worry. You'll get in. We both will."
He pauses, then adds,
"Or we don't. And we end up as street musicians, removing warts for a pound. Sorry, dollar.
Or charming runaway chickens." He laughs.
"Never heard that one before."
I could make a living as a novice, sure, with a little silver pin on my collar. Anyone at all can be a novice, even without going to a music craft school. I'd just be unable to join a symphony, and I'd never get to play high-level spells. I'd forever be a beginner, never finding out my true potential. And worst of all, I'd fail my mom. I can still remember the day I found her flute. I was 7 years old, digging around Gran's attic for a sled since it had snowed the day before. Instead, I found a slender black case, and inside it, the impossible. A flute. Her flute. I could remember her and me lying on a picnic blanket under a big tree, and her playing a spell to make the wind rustle the leaves. I could remember her polishing the flute, sitting on a faded blue couch while I lay with my feet in her lap, listening to music on the radio. "Why do you listen to this?" I asked her. "It doesn't make any magic." "Recorded music is just sounds. It has to be played live to become a spell." "Oh, Amelia." In my hazy memories, her voice was always shifting. Sometimes light, sometimes deep, but it was always kind. "There is magic in just listening, you know. And if you listen close enough, you can hear music everywhere." Then she let me hold her flute and pretend to play it, my fingers on top of hers as she showed me the fingerings for her favorite spells. In a way, the flute and my mom are one and the same. If I hold it tight enough, sometimes I can imagine it's her hand I'm holding. I thought it had been lost after she died. When I'd asked Gran about the flute, she got upset and hid it again. I was so mad that I tried to run away from home, but I only made it as far as Mrs. O'Grady's. She was the one who told me my mom had gone to the Mistwick School of Music Craft and become a maestro. And that's when I decided I would do everything it took to get there too. I would find out if I was good enough to follow in her footsteps.
241,
shouts the woman in charge of the audition room doors, startling me from my thoughts.
"Well, here I go,"
Jai sighs, taking his violin from his case. "Good luck."
"Psh, who needs luck?"
He grins.
"The maestros like confidence, Amelia Jones. Don't forget it. Your magic is only as strong as your belief."
He gives me a thumbs up, then disappears through the double doors to the audition room. If it's confidence the maestros want, then they might as well hand Jai his diploma and golden maestro pin. I already saw him play like a master. He's got the swagger of one, too. I look around, my eyes falling on the girl beside me, who's obsessively polishing her oboe. "Hi," I say with a little wave. "Where are you from?" The girl's lips curl. "There's something in your hair." I reach up and feel around until I find it, a fluffy white chicken feather. These kids are all serious, well-dressed, shining. I bet their instruments cost a ton. Maybe they've had fancy tutors and all their relatives are famous and important maestros like Jai's. I wonder if any of them have ever charmed a chicken for $5 or ridden their bike 3 miles through a rainstorm just to get to their music teacher's house.
242,
calls the lady. I look up to see Jai leaving. He gives me a thumbs up. I guess his audition went well. My eyes follow him as he leaves, and I wonder if I'll ever see him again. I hope he gets into Mistwick. But then, why wouldn't he? His family is a tradition there. And so is mine, I remind myself.
242,
the voice calls again, louder, and I jolt upright, remembering that I'm 242. The woman in charge of the doors waves, urging me to hurry. Her brown hair is tied into a sleek ponytail, and it swings as she shakes her head, her eyes taking in my appearance with disapproval. "Sorry," I say quickly. 242? I nod. Through here, dear. Quickly now. And good luck. Drawing a deep breath, I walk past her and into the next room, clutching my flute case like it's afloat, and I'm about to jump into a stormy, shark-infested sea.